Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome, everybody, to an I Can't Believe That It's Not Your Mother's Grandma's Geek Cave podcast. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad.
People who don't understand how a pair of glasses keeps Clark Kent from being recognized as Superman have never seen Tony Hawk without a skateboard. Welcome to comics.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He's done so many interviews where it's like, you look like Tony Hawk. Yeah, I get that all the time.
I don't blame him.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, or he shows his ID. Oh, Tony Hawk, just like the skater, right? Yeah.
Just like that.
Just like him.
Just like that. And speaking of things that are just like that, I want to talk about our sponsor, Shirtosaurus. Digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today. With free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs for everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. And let's not forget Gamefly. With membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages, Gamefly has thousands of titles for you to keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back in the postage paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever and pay a lot less than those in-store prices. And they just updated their rewards program, where you can stack up to $20 in coupons towards any purchase. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. So it finally happened. We finally, I'm not going to say lost. We misplaced a Gamefly game. It was a Switch game. Those little buggers are hard to keep track of.
Well, just have someone go around and lick everything, and when they get the increasingly bitter thing.
Well, I was going to say, you know that that's at least probably not the case. I mean, probably nobody ate it.
Right, because...
That's true.
You know,
so it's got to be somewhere.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, because Gamefly is so good with their prices, we can buy the game that is somewhere in our house for a relatively good price. And
there you go.
Should we find it, hey, we got a game.
Yeah, and the longer you're a Gamefly member, the more coupons you get. So, and now you can stack them, as Justin just said. So really, you know, it's almost like they're paying you to keep it.
I know. Hey, speaking of things that were lost, Darren, did you do anything recently?
I don't know if we're talking about innocence or dollars, but...
Chad!
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
Darren's first time.
Motherfucker, I told you be gentle.
I don't know why I called for Kent just now. Maybe I want to hear him do that intro. All right.
You're getting ahead of the game there, boy.
I'm getting ahead of the game a little bit. Yeah. Okay. If you're listening to this podcast.
And you should be.
You should be. I mean, really, if you're not, then I don't know how you're hearing me, but that's kind of a trip.
I mean, what are you even doing right now if you're not listening to us?
What are you doing with your life if we are not in your ear holes right now?
Okay, how about this? If you're a regular listener of this podcast, then...
Which you should be.
Which you should...
Hello, fans on Discord.
There's a good chance you are familiar with the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah!
Yeah, you know. Group of teens... Okay, actually, like actors in their mid-20s, with attitude. They are gifted superpowers by way of the magic suits that they don in an instant. Or you're familiar with Invincible, modern-day superhero tale about someone having to come to terms with great and potentially terrible powers and responsibilities while also coming of age.
Please tell me these two aren't combining in some horrible fashion.
Well, with that being said.
Oh, my God.
Now for something completely familiar.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Radiant Black, a story about a youngish adult who has to come to terms with phenomenal superpowers he gets from donning a seemingly magical supersuit while also balancing coming of age.
Okay.
And then he dies. Kind of.
What?
Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. Created by Kyle Higgins, who has worked on the Batman franchise at DC and the Power Rangers books at Boom Studios. I picked up the first trade of the series. It launched last year. Nathan Burnett has just turned 30. And things are going about as well for him as they are for most millennials living near Chicago, which is where this story takes place.
Okay.
Is he on the south side?
I don't know, but his jobs aren't going well. Yes, I said jobs, plural. He's got mounds of debt, and he just had to move back in with his parents. After a night at the bar with his friend Marshall, more on him later, Nathan finds what looks like a miniature black hole just kind of floating there in the air.
I think this is how Excel Saga started, too.
Well, because alcohol and great decisions are, they just go hand in hand. He grabs it. He grabs it, which is, again,
as you do.
Any reasonable person would. And he instantly finds himself wearing a suit that is remarkably similar but legally distinct from the Black Power Ranger.
Oh, jeez.
Dubbing himself Radiant Black, he finds that his powers are mostly gravity-based. He can throw things and people. He can lift heavy objects. He can project concussive force. And he can fly. Things are going really great until he runs into another Radiant. This one happens to be red, but again, legally distinct. And they happen to be using their powers to knock off a bank. As you do. A fight ensues. The red one flees after primarily kicking the crap out of Nathan. Nathan manages to return the money. Marshall, his friend, starts a Twitter account in Radiant Black's name, because of course he does, and the public mostly accepts him. Eventually, another fight with Red happens. Nathan ends up saving Red right before a building collapses on him. The energy, which has been revealed at this point to be sentient, declares him dead, leaves his body, and jumps into Marshall.
Okay.
Who is now the new Radiant Black. And who has sworn vengeance. Not to worry. It turns out Nathan had the G.I. Joe, the animated movie treatment, and was later downgraded to a coma.
Wouldn't that be upgraded to a coma?
Well, it depends. How much did you like G.I. Joe, the animated movie?
I mean, it was fun.
It was fine until things got weird.
Yeah. That's a deep pull. Marshall tracks down Red and easily outclasses the other Radiant, blowing Red's armor away to reveal that, despite all appearances earlier to be a big, strong, meaty man, Red is actually a girl named Satomi.
Okay.
She'd use the suit to actually change her appearance, which is really smart when you think of it, you know? She had been using it to pay off her fiancé's horrible and crippling gambling addiction debt by knocking off banks.
As you do.
As one does. The fiancé had also ended up wiping out her own college fund without her knowledge.
As you do.
Not really much else to say about him in this volume other than that she takes it better than I would have. They barely have time to talk when two more Radiants, one pink, one yellow, again legally distinct, show up telling them that the world is in danger, and all four are attacked by an individual that seems to be wielding green energy of some sort and looks a little bit like the rest of the Radiants.
If the title of this episode isn't Legally Distinct.
Yeah, you can see where things are going. As for first times, honestly, this was a blast. I held on tightly as I was taken for a ride that left me ready for more. I'll probably become a repeat customer, if you will. I give it 5. Don't call it Morphin Times out of 5.
Legally distinct Morphin Times.
Legally distinct. Legally distinct. That was actually in my notes, but I decided to shift things a little bit. Didn't want to come off as repetitive.
So you're saying that you metamorphosized after reading this?
The experience changed me. And then, like a flash of lightning, I was done.
My goodness.
Because I read it fast.
I get you. I understand. I'm on board with these things.
Well, well, speaking of things that won't legally get us in trouble, anybody got any reviews?
I do have a review that won't get us in trouble. Chad, I know you've been reading it too.
I also have a review that might get us in trouble.
Let's go with Chad's first, because if we're going to go all in, let's go all in.
So I read Alice Ever After. It's a first issue from Boom Studios. It's an interesting take on the Alice in Wonderland mythos and story, dealing with an older Alice that seems to have some price of mental health issues and some addiction issues.
I would.
And, well, in this case, the pills that she takes are what take her to Wonderland. But when her dealer's killed, she still has to figure out some way of getting the pills. And so she, spoiler alert, she checks herself into the sanitarium where her dealer worked as a custodian so that she can get her pills. It's run by what looks like the Queen of Hearts.
Of course it is.
Scene.
It's
interesting. I don't know if it's good yet. It's very dark. It is dark in tone, not dark in colors. You're being narrated this story by her cats. And
it
overwhelmingly is kind of a Victorian England kind of feel. But I do plan on getting the next issue or two, because my interest has been piqued. And
the gotta know threshold's been crossed.
Well, for just a few dollars, I mean, it's like the Mrs. Buttersworth Fruity Pebbles syrup of comics. It's just interesting enough that I'm willing to spend the dollars to know.
That is a reference to our group chat. Not Discord, personal group chat.
Yeah. Yes, that you have to be in a special elite club to get in. I'm not sure how I got into it, but here I am.
Yeah,
a single $1,000 donation to Extra Life.
We'll rename the group chat after you. We don't even have to use the word memorial.
Because you won't be dead, I hope.
As far as we know.
$1,000 donation later. Hey, I sent you guys a message on Tim. Did you get it?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, totally got it.
Tim just stands for "This is Mayo" or something.
This is Mayo. This is Mayo. Darren, do you have anything?
Yeah. I also read a book about a strong female protagonist. This is Batgirl Year One.
You know, I have yet to read a Year One that hasn't been pretty good.
Yeah, that was also a sentiment echoed in the Discord, and this one is right up there. This was released in 2019, and it follows Barbara Gordon's first steps into crime fighting, how she made a Batgirl costume, essentially just to prank her father at a socialite costume ball, and ends up having to save his life from Killer Moth, of all people.
That sounds about right.
And forges somehow a lifelong rivalry with Killer Moth, because Killer Moth is like that damn Batgirl. Yes, he's the one who named her. She wanted to be called Batwoman, but it stuck. Yeah. I know. That's
you got to get ahead of the narrative.
You got to copyright that thing. The art's great. The writing is great. It's fun to see Barbara's first, the modernized take of like Barbara's first steps into the foray, even at one point talking to herself about, not knowing what the future holds. It's not like I'm an oracle or anything.
Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Some of my favorite moments included at the masquerade ball. Bruce Wayne is dressed as a clown.
Of course he is.
And she's pushing him aside to try to save him. And he stops to ask, who are you? And she says, just run, you idiot, which is great. Later on, she refers to Batman as, quote, you big, scary goon, which is just delightful.
Also, pretty accurate.
Yeah. Pretty accurate. And when she finally does win Batman's trust, Jim Gordon, her father, police, eventually commissioner, is closing in on Batgirl's identity. He's pretty sure it's Barbara. So what do they do? Well, Dick Grayson, age 16, by the way, is made to dress up as Babs and stand just in the distance and not say anything while Batman introduces his new associate, just as the time Barbara comes to the roof of the GCPD and her father has a confused look. All the while, Dick is muttering to himself, I thought she liked me.
Please, please, please tell me that there is a shot of Dick Grayson's butt in the Batgirl costume, because as we all know, Dick has a phenomenal butt.
He does have a phenomenal butt. I look forward to reading Nightwing Year One to see if it makes it, but the butt did not show up. There were some great interactions between Barbara and the Justice Society, because in order to get their attention, since the FBI turned her down due to height requirements, she's like, fine, I will become a vigilante, and manages to break into the Justice Society's headquarters, leaving
height
a note.
Requirements.
Yes. Yeah, I know. It's a running joke, actually. Yeah, I know. It's a running joke in the book. Leaves a letter for the Black Canary on the JSA's table, gets out and erases all evidence of her existence being there except for the letter. And then is confronted by Wildcat, who again reminds her of height requirements. So yeah, it's a running gag.
Okay.
It's a fun one. She does eventually get that team up with Black Canary. It goes about as well as you would think for someone who's a rookie chasing Killer Moth and now Firefly.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. But it's a good time. I recommend it.
So, two things. One, that is very similar to her origin in the before times, except she saved Bruce Wayne from Killer Moth.
Yeah. Well, okay. I might be getting it mixed up. Jim Gordon is the first one attacked, but Moth may have been going after Bruce, if I think back, because money.
Hmm. Yeah, money.
What year is this supposedly taking place?
I don't know. It was released in 2019.
The reason I ask is because the FBI did have a height requirement of 5'7" or taller until 1975.
Okay. Well, this seems to take place in modern day, but I love that.
I like to think Wildcat is very, very old school, so modern height restrictions be damned, the old way says.
Yeah.
Well, dames can't come in unless they're 5'7" or taller.
Well, now it's just about, you know, being able to do the work.
I like the wrinkle in the story that Babs is pretty sure Batman is rich, but she doesn't know who Batman is yet. But as she's collecting her own crime-fighting gear, she's like, he's either independently wealthy or he's a thief, because there is no way someone could have this kind of tech and equipment.
The other thing is she should have pulled a 90s Superboy. And the first time somebody called her Batgirl, she should have said, don't call me Batgirl.
I'm the Gotham Kid.
Yeah, I'm the Gotham Kid.
That'd be worse.
It would be worse.
So much worse.
I liked how she took out not a shoplifter, like someone trying to rob a convenience store. She dove behind the counter, grabbed a bag full of like cans of baked beans and just hit him in the face with it.
For those of you who are only 21 or 22 years old, the 90s were weird.
Look up Max Landis's Death and Return of Superman. You'll get the joke.
Yes.
It's on YouTube.
I've got a brief review. Chad, do you have anything else before we kind of move on?
Well, I was doing a little bit of reading some of the old stuff we had, and I guess I have, well, it's probably just a stupid question.
Oh, there are no stupid questions.
And now it's time for Chad Savage's stupid question.
So I was, I realized when I was cleaning out one of our rooms that we still have like the Aquaman, the trench back when the New 52 mm-hmm. was just getting started.
Yeah.
And Aquaman, he can breathe underwater, right?
Yes.
And he can breathe in on land, the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why isn't he called Amphibiman?
Well, scientifically, frogs are tadpoles come into play. I know this. I'm going to get back to you.
Okay.
Thank you for that. I enjoyed that. I'm going to start calling him Amphibiman now. See how long it takes my wife to catch on.
She is a very smart woman. It will be the first time, and she's going to be like, what the hell's wrong with you?
Please watch Retromantics.
So I have a very quick review.
All right.
Dear listener, Paul Gungraves.
Hey, Paul.
Sent me a code to a comic, which I downloaded and started reading. It's called Barbaric, Volume 1, Murderable Offenses.
Hmm.
I'm not going to spoil this because I think it is worth the read. Spoiler alert, or trigger warning, really. It is very gory.
Yeah.
Okay. It is about a barbaric warrior who has been cursed to only kill the wicked. And he is cursed to do so by carrying a sentient axe that craves the blood of the wicked. It talks. It has a face.
Does it have googly eyes?
No, it does not have googly eyes. But damn. Normally where there's a point, a sharp end of an axe, it's a face.
Oh.
With teeth and a mouth.
Oh, okay.
And so when he swings it at, a, you know, the person in question, mouth first, into said righteous fury. So yeah. If you like, and it's silly. It is a fun read. So if you don't mind a lot of blood spatter with your comedy, I suggest Barbaric, Volume 1, Murderable Offenses. And again, thanks to Paul Graves, longtime listener, first-time submitter, for helping me out with this.
This guy's lobbying for, like, membership of the podcast, isn't he?
He wants to be on the group chat.
Not everyone could get into Tim, though.
Not everyone.
I mean, usually it takes drinks first.
If there are any Tims listening, hi, Tim. We don't know all your names.
If there is a Tim listening, please reach out to us at geekcavepodcast@gmail.com.
Especially if you got
$1,000. Nobody feels left out.
Yeah.
Hi, Emily.
Yeah.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, A. Aaron Aronson.
Hi, Babs.
Arlene Sorkin.
I would love to get Arlene Sorkin on the show.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, hi, Greg Wiseman.
Hi, Greg Wiseman.
Hi, Jimmy Fallon.
Hi, Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. Hi, Babs Tarr. Just think, you can join this illustrious lineup.
Yeah. Well, I guess with, does anybody have anything else?
I do not.
No.
Then it's time to move on to the main event. Kent?
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Prepare yourself for Justin's long Yeah, baby. Extra long.
Growing up, superheroes were a part of my life. Between comics, cartoons, toys, movies, I couldn't get enough. Hell, I even created my own hero persona, Super Justin. I was six, shut up. I can see the smirks, shut up. I was adorable.
There was no smirk. I had no smirk.
I have a smile of joy.
I mean,
I can't help it that I can't smile fully.
I'm sorry, I forgot about your condition. Please don't Will Smith me.
Aw.
In another 5 years, no one's going to get that reference. So those of you listening back, just you're better off.
Keep my dang face out your mouth.
Yeah. But speaking of kids becoming heroes, this month we look at Power Pack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was brought up last month, I think, just randomly, and so I thought, you know what? I'm going to expound on this. Created by Louise Simonson and June Brigman, they first appeared in their own series in 1984, and it lasted 62 issues. That's over 5 years for those counting.
Yeah, it was weird seeing them in Mutant Massacre.
Yeah.
And I'm not even joking.
Yeah, don't get ahead of me, Darren.
Sorry.
So
I'm excited about this.
In the beginning, we have Alex, age 12, Julie, age 10, Jack, age 8, and Katie, age 5. The Powers kids. That's their last name, Power. Because go figure. They were bright, normal American children living with their parents in a beachfront house in Virginia. However, that would all soon change. Bum, bum, bum!
Nice.
Thank you. Their father, Dr. James Power, was a brilliant psychiatrist who discovered a process to... physicist. Physicist who discovered a process to generate energy from antimatter with the assistance of a converter. The process, however, was known to several alien races to cause a chain reaction and destroy planets. Again. Bum, bum, bum!
At least he's not a peace psychiatrist.
That's true. Dr. Power's research was discovered by Alfre Whiteman. Whitemane, a member of the Kymalian race, who resemble humanoid horses. Whitemane, get it? Yeah. Apparently, his planet was destroyed by this very process. Whitemane tried to stop the experiment by warning the Powers, but was mortally wounded by his enemies, the reptilian Snarks.
Snark, snark.
Now, I've known a few snarky people in my day, but they've never been reptilian. The Snarks kidnapped Dr. Power and his wife, Margaret, hoping to obtain the secret of antimatter. Whitemane rescued the Powers' children and told them what was happening. Before dying, he passed his powers to them to complete his mission.
Okay.
Children, with the help of Whitemane's sentient starship, called Friday, managed to stop the Snarks by rescuing their parents. They decided to continue being superheroes to hide their powers from their parents. Alex took the code name G for gravity. Julie became Lightspeed for acceleration. Jack became Mass Matter for density. And Katie became Energizer for energy. Yes, this basically sums up their powers.
You know what? That's exactly what I would imagine kids would call themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's accurate.
They wore costumes made for them by Friday, and the costumes were constructed of unstable molecules and stored, quote, elsewhere, and could materialize and disappear on voice command. After rescuing their parents, the entire family moved to New York City, where the team attempted to deal with the normal kid problems, such as bullies, loose teeth, while battling some of the deadliest villains in the Marvel Universe.
Sure.
So just a real quick question before you keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a team of four family members that are given kind of powers based on some cosmic accident.
Wait a sec.
Are their costumes legally distinct?
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. A, they're owned by Marvel, so they don't have to be legally distinct. Two, the Fantastic Four are not all family members.
You know what? You shut your whore mouth. Ben is a treasure.
He is. He is a treasure, and I'm not saying that. But he is not blood related to Reed or Sue or Johnny. The only blood relations are Johnny and Sue. And as my whore mouth was saying, the Pack fought the villain Curse on two occasions during Secret Wars 2. They were also heavily involved in the events of the Fall of the Mutants and the Inferno storylines. During the Mutant Massacre, they descended into the sewers and fought Sabretooth. The two greatest enemies from the original series were the Snarks and the Boogeyman. The Snarks generally attempted to kidnap the Powers children and steal their powers. The Boogeyman, James Powers' former employee, spotted the Powers children when they stole the antimatter converter at the beginning of the series and became obsessed with revenge. At first, he tried to work with the government agencies to prove the Powers were mutants. Later, he became a supervillain himself, assuming the identity of the Boogeyman, after being thrown into limbo by magic of the New Mutants. He returned in a demonic form and nearly killed the entire Power family before ultimately committing suicide. It is a fun family romp we are on here, gentlemen.
Sounds great.
Clearly.
The team took great pains to conceal their superhuman abilities from their family and, quote, normal friends. However, during Inferno, when confronted by the demonic Boogeyman, the children were forced to reveal their identities to save their parents. This discovery led their parents to having a mental breakdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I probably would.
That's probably, like, the least traumatic thing that happened in Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
The parents were restored to normal through a combination of efforts of Mirage and Gossamer, who convinced them that the superpowered children were clones created to protect them from the Boogeyman, and the real Powers children were powerless. This explanation placated the parents, and once they were reunited with their, quote, normal children, their minds healed themselves, and the, quote, clones, which had been generated by Mirage, were removed, making the children's secret identity safe once again. Another occasional member of the team was Franklin Richards, the son of Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman. Who went by the code name Tattletale while adventuring. Why? No clue.
He informed the lawyers.
Sometime later, Alex underwent a transformation, and Margaret Power began to lose her mind. The Power family sought help for Margaret and Alex in various places, beginning with Reed Richards, and moving their way through the ranks of the Marvel Universe. They traveled to the UK. One day the children were playing in the sun and the sand, and their father consulted with colleagues, but found themselves confronted with what seemed to be an alien attack on the beach while they were relaxing. They decided to abandon New York and fly to New Kymalia, you know, where White Mane had come from. Apparently, sure. Not everybody died, so they built a new place, like New Krypton.
Or New Asgard.
Yes.
Or New York.
Or New Jersey.
Or New York or New Jersey, yes.
New Mexico.
New Haven.
Yeah. They
New
went
Vegas.
There, New Vegas. Ooh. And they went there to seek help for Alex and his mother. After recovering on the planet, the Powers family returned to New York. Each of the children was back in possession of their own powers. And the parents remained unaware of the children's abilities somehow. Don't ask me why.
This feels like like one of those weekly episodic cartoon things.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, oh, we got to get back. They might find out this time. Whoa. And then they're just. Or no, Phineas and Ferb. That's what it makes me think of. Yeah. Phineas and Ferb. I swear to God, there's a giant skyscraper in our backyard and it's done.
May I continue?
Yeah. Just
because I'm not done.
We're helping.
That's more for Chad's benefit. Chad, I'm not done yet.
All right.
At one point, Alex gains the ability to absorb the powers of all of his siblings and use them himself. With these powers, he joined the new warriors under the name Power Packs, P-A-X.
Boo!
And later, Powerhouse.
It's extreme.
Now, this caused some friction between Alex and his siblings. Even their parents, the most oblivious people in the universe, noticed the heightened levels of hostility. Eventually, he gave the others their power back, and the four reverted to their original hero names, except Alex, who started calling himself Zero G.
Also extreme. It's got a Z.
Yes.
In it.
At some point out of the published story, their parents discovered their children were superheroes, and they were fine with it. Doesn't matter. Don't ask. Don't think too hard about it.
Okay.
Following the events of a 2000 miniseries, Julie left the family for unrevealed circumstances to try and become an actress in Los Angeles. That didn't go anywhere.
No. It's Marvel.
Yeah.
I mean, DC's no better, but still, it's Marvel.
Yeah. During Civil War...
Yeah.
Alex's codename Powerhouse was briefly mentioned by Hindsight Lad. Eh?
See, now that's like one of the stupid names a Legion of Superheroes would have come up with. I'm not sorry.
And later, Alex and Julie joined Reed Richards' Future Foundation, which allowed gifted children living in the Baxter Building to map out and the outlook of their generation. So there's everything you never wanted to know about Power Pack.
He's right.
He's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Although that Power Packs sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it's got an X at the end, so you know it's hip.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not two words like Power Pack. It's Power Pack.
I'll accept nothing less than ripped jeans, 80 pockets, and a leather jacket.
Reasonable.
Yeah, I'm okay with this.
I'm willing to accept
but
these
like
conditions.
The back of the jacket just has to have the word patches on it in like big red jagged letters.
Yeah.
Okay.
And speaking of things that are totally rad and tubular, I want to thank our sponsor, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly. Be sure to check out our other shows. You want me to watch what? The Week 3 podcast, the Sporadic TLDR, and on YouTube, Geek Cave Plays, and as previously mentioned, Retromantics. Look us up on social media, including Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Discord. Links for all of them and much more can be found at geekcavepodcast.com. And say hi when you get there. Be sure to tell your friends about us. We're on all your favorite podcast services and recently added to Good Pods. And now here's your out-of-context comic panel. We see young Jimmy Olsen riding a hot dog with horse legs, screaming, "My wiener has a mind of its own."
I saw it.
For Kent, Darren, and Chad, I'm Justin. This has been the Wonderful World of Comics. And remember, everyone is a geek for something.